I think between now and later in the year, we're going to see somewhere 60 to 70 bucks silver. And again, that's not the end of the move. That's just this surging leg. And I see silver outperforming gold during that time. And I also see the gold and silver miners outperforming gold during that time.
Michael Oliver, good afternoon to you, my friend. How are you?
Yeah, very good, Andy. Good to be here.
Great to have you. And really, I wanted to have you on to talk about silver market. You've had some great calls that it looks like to be working out in the silver market here. That being said, want to know where your thoughts are, where we currently are at, where we're going, and if this run is over with.
No, the run just began. If you go back and look at a silver price chart, just what idiot chart I call it, because it's just price, okay? I go back to last May, silver hit a high at $32.70. Okay.
Right.
Then came back up in October, hit $35, dropped. Came back up in March of this year, hit $35, dropped. Okay. But if you draw a line through the May high of last year, you can intersect most of the action, all the action since over the last year, okay? May to May. We've been above it, below it, but it just basically hovers around that midpoint. You had a plunge that cleaned everything out, that fake out sell-off to 2750 that occurred in the first week of April, where silver thought it should be part of the stock market. And no, okay, anyway. Silver, during that year of nothing on price, where it just looked like confusion, on momentum, you get a different picture, which we, of course, include in our reports. That's our prime focus. You had a downtrending channel on momentum that smacked you in the face. When you looked at it, you said, whoa, if I get above that channel, I'm breaking out. Okay. When we came back up to 3490 a week ago, not back to the 235 peaks at 3520 and 3540, whatever they were, but just below there, you blew that channel out on momentum. It says, okay, I'm awake again. It's what you've seen for the last year is noise, me correcting by going sideways. And suddenly you go to 37. Okay. Then you back off a bit. Now you're 30, mid 36s. Okay. You're cooling off for a few days. Here's my projection. I think that silver is going to one, outpace gold now going forward and regain normalcy with versus gold. I specifically think silver could go to, right now it's like 1%. 1.1% of the price of gold. A lot of people measure it the other way, but we do it, we divide silver into gold. I think it'd go to 2% easily. Well, that's almost a doubling the current valuation level of silver to gold. Okay, so that's one background hint. Of course, that doesn't tell you about price. It just says silver's going to beat gold by doubling its gains over the next whatever, you know. I think in the next 3 to 5 months, silver's going to blow out 50 bucks.
Wow.
Old, no, these are old phantom highs. And when I say phantom, what I mean is when you go back and look at them, one of them didn't even quite get to 50, but let's call it 50. You stayed up there for hours, not months, okay? It was like gas, thin air, and immediately relapsed. So it really wasn't up there for long. And two, when you factor in the decay in the money unit, the real value of the dollar, 1980, 2011. Jeez, we could be at 200 bucks to match those highs,
Cool.
real dollar terms. Okay. But right now, I suspect that the first surge that we're getting, that has begun, I don't think, I'm not waiting on any more numbers. In the next 3 to 5 months, we'll get you well above 50, likely into the $60, $70 range. Now, that's not the end of it, but that's the next surge. And I think it will be quite dramatic. I mean, obviously, if you go there, that's a big percent gain in silver over such a small period of time. But I think between now and later in the year, we're going to see somewhere 60 to 70 bucks silver. And again, that's not the end of the move. That's just this surging leg. And I see silver outperforming gold during that time. And I also see the gold and silver miners outperforming gold during that time.
Got it. Okay, so really what you're talking about, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't want to put words in your mouth. You're talking about the gold and silver ratio. You see that ratio compressing significantly then over the next few months, correct?
Yeah. Again, I measure it a different way. I simply divide an ounce of silver to gold, 1 ounce. And right now you're 1.1%. If you go back over the last 50 plus years and look at each year, what was the best reading that silver had each year at some point in that relationship to gold? 2% is almost normal. It occurred like 21 of the last 50 years. Silver's at least been 2%. And those weren't necessarily even dynamic bull trend years. In the more dynamic bull trend years, like 1979 and 80, or 2010 and 11, silver got up to 3.5% and more, the price of silver. Well, just forget the price of silver right now and gold. Just look at that spread and say, well, gee, I'm going to buy something at $1.10 and it's going to go to $2. Okay? That's nearly a double just in the relative performance.
Right.
I say go to $2. That's not even some outlandish norm. That's the norm. 2% is like a median for 50 years. And given that we're in a bull trend, we could go further than that. But right now, I'm focused personally on this particular leg, in part due to the fact I'm also heavily into calls. And calls have, you know, time since. But I do think in the next 3 to 5 months, you'll get that kind of dramatic, I'm out of here move. Not that that's the end of the move, but that is the surge that I'm looking right now. And I think that it's about to unfold. And there's some other events in other markets that are also at what I would call major snap points.
Okay, let's talk about the miners first, and then let's talk about the other events or the other markets here that you see unfolding that could help propel this forward. So talk to me about GDX, GDXJ, ETFs that you, different mining ETFs that you trade and follow.
Yeah. We plot the spreads on these guys about every weekend report. What we do is we divide the price of GDX, for example, or GDXJ into the price of GDX. So we get a spread relation between the junior miners and the big miners, okay? And since 2020 surged, remember, everything went up big then. Silver went up big, gold miners, gold, et cetera. The relative performance of the junior miners dropped back down and built what, if you look at the spread chart now, forget the price of the ETFs themselves. It built a base. Whereas the performance dropped and then it went boom, sideways. The top end of that base was so definable, an idiot with a crayon could draw it on the spread chart. We broke through that. The junior miners have now broken through, meaning the junior miners are now about to outperform the bigger guys. Now, that could have, you know, some meanings to it, and I don't want to try to interpret it too much, but when money flows into the mining sector and then focuses more on the juniors, it suggests to me that there's some nervous people in the stock market who are not normally gold investors, but they've started to hear about gold going up finally. They got the message. And the miners have done quite well lately, even on price basis, to, you know, sort of garner their interest. Yeah, they want to buy cheap. They want to, you know, a lot of investors like to buy more stock at a cheaper price. So that means the juniors. So that could be one of the influential factors in that shift in the spread. In other words, public interest in the sector. The other spread that's going to gain, I argue, is silver versus gold. Now, when I go back, now let me give you context on the gold miners versus gold. When you go back, we've run charts on this to the 1980s, and you plot the XAU index, which is gold and silver miners, Philadelphia index. It has a long history. You go back in the 1980s through the present. Between the 1980s, 90s, and into 2000, early 2000s, it was in a spread relationship between 17.5% of the price of gold, dividing XAU into gold to get the express as a percent, and 35%. So again, there's this range. Let's call it 17.5, 35. You lived in it. When we went into the bear market, 2013, 14, and 15, that spread collapsed all the way down to 4%. I think, imagine a stock that's been living 17.5 to 35 bucks, then goes to 4 bucks. Okay, it's a wipeout. Okay.
Yeah.
But since that late 2015 low, where the miners were lowest they've ever been relative to the mother metal, the spread has upticked a bit and gone into a range. Right now, that spread's at about 6%. divide XAU into the price of gold. Still very low, but it's firming, meaning it's actually higher right now than it was in late 2015. That means the miners have actually, if you do the math, have gained more than gold since the bear low. Hard to believe because of the tone, the way the price has advanced has been sort of sloppy. But actually, on a net basis, if you bought gold miners then as opposed to gold, you did better than buying gold. Okay, when I look at that spread chart, and we examine it technically, you come up out of this base, and I think that's what you're about to do, you're going to go up to next resistance. Where's next resistance? 17.5%. Multi-decade lows, okay? That's just getting back to the bottom end of what had been the reality for 30 years, okay? Or 20 years. That's a tripling, you know, in the price of miners relative to gold.
Yeah.
Current levels. So I argue not only is silver going to outperform gold going forward, but the miners are going to vastly outperform gold. And again, that's probably due to a sense of growing uncertainty about the stock market, despite the recent teaser rally, which, by the way, is not reflected in the leadership anymore. And people get nervous and they look around and say, well, what's working? And a buddy down the street, he bought gold miners 6 months ago and he's smiling. And they said, well, I didn't believe you, but you know, maybe I need to do that. And so they start to move some of their money. They're not going to buy silver futures, you know, okay? And not necessarily options, but they'll go in and buy those miners because that's a stock and some of them have dividends and so forth. So I think that's a reflection, this shifts toward the miners, not only in the cheapness of the miners relative to gold or relative to the S&P even, but in the shift in sentiment that's beginning, looking for a better place to be, lower risk, greater reward potential. I think that's what's transitioning right now.
Yeah, you're talking about money flow. We've actually talked, you and I talked about that in the past, and I was actually just this week talking it over with a lot of my investment friends here. We are seeing, we're not only expecting, but we're starting to see money flow into the mining sector. So it's about time, is what I
Yeah, well, and I think it could be jolting because once an old reality is dispensed with, and the old reality was unreal, I mean, it shouldn't have been that cheap. You know, if you lived in the 17.5% to 35% level, and you go to 4%, I mean, what do you, it was a nuke event, you know, it's off the page. In other words, that spread alone says you want to buy cheap. It's a good rule. Buy low, sell high. That was low. Okay. And those who bought it there are actually making money. But just to go up to the bottom end of old normality is a stunning move. And I think that move net price wise, when you look at a price chart of GDX or SIL, the silver mining, or GDXJ, and go back and look at that 2011 peak that they all made, I think we're going to take that out in the next five or so months. Just as a first, no, excuse me, not the end of the move, just as this statement coming up out of the whole thing. Partly a function, again, of money moving into miners, but also, and more so than gold because of the valuation. And the fact that it's sold out,
yeah.
You know. I think there's a vacuum above us, and I think it'll happen fast where you can't, those who've doubted it for too long and don't act, they should have already acted, frankly, by our reports. It should have been in last March, really doubled up. Then GDX was 31.5, okay, it's now 53 or something. But you don't get a chance to participate. If you wait 2-3 months from now, you'll be chasing it. No, you still may make money, but you're definitely not a smart move to get in at that point without perceiving the risk.
Yeah. And just for all of our listeners and viewers, and we'll get a lot of them on this, two things I want to do real quick. I am an investor in both GDX and GDXJ. I have them in my portfolio, as well as I'm a very happy client of Michael Oliver's. I have Michael has not paid for this interview, and I get nothing from anything from his services. I am just merely, and it's a big thing, I'm a very happy client. So that's a testament to you and your services, Michael. Michael, what other things, if you mentioned other markets that you analyze and looking at, that could impact this move. What talk to me about that, because I can see that or be influencing the money flow.
Yeah. Often when something like this happens that we're describing in silver and the gold miners, it doesn't happen in isolation. Whereas they might have been going up for years without much events elsewhere. But when you get to this point where you start to accelerate headline type behavior, usually there's other stuff going on. And technically speaking, the crossover we just had in silver a week ago, that momentum chart I told you about, the fresh snap to the upside, boom, fresh again, okay? But I go over and look at certain other key markets, for example, the T-bond market. It's got a level below it that looks like that somebody's trying to support it. The tonal behavior of the market is shifted into a unusual behavior, as if central bank governments in there trying to keep it from bursting through a level. And frankly, they're bidding it right spot, because if it gets much below the lows we just saw, we argue you could get an implosion that would make headlines. Now,
really? That would never happen.
Yeah, right. It's an unreality that'll stay an unreality, right? We could have government debt forever. No big deal. Okay. The other market to watch is what we call the quiet one. That's the dollar index. We know that all the fiat currencies decay at aggressive rates every decade. Our money supply grows by 90% almost every single decade, going back to the 50s. Meaning its value is drops almost 50% every decade. It's real buying power. Okay. So if you bought a stock 50 years ago and you're up fivefold, you're not making any money. Okay. It's a joke. In real, how many loaves of bread will it buy? The same amount it bought then. Okay. The dollar index reached a high back in October of 2022 at 115. That was a nice little spike high. Still well below levels we saw a couple of decades ago. Okay. It collapsed from that level in late 2022 into early 23 and stopped at 100. Again, the dollar index is primarily a weighting of the euro and the yen. They constitute over 70% of the inverse of the dollar index. Okay. Since 23 and 2024, it stayed in a range of about 8%, 100, 107, 800, 107, 108. Actually pierced up to 110 briefly and then failed. In March, as we were pulling back, price was 104, just above 104. We said, that's it. It's over. It's entering a major bear trend. That was based on one of our annual momentum studies. We've since dropped another 5-6 points around the 98 level, just like a month ago. Rebounded up to 101, like, oh boy, I'm okay. And now it's back under 98 again. Again, not super dramatic price movements. And also the percent move is not that huge yet. You know, even from that range, we're only a couple percent below that multi-year range. But momentum broke a structure going back a couple decades. There is another momentum trigger level we have that is a monster. It's based on 10-year average, and it happens to agree with where the average is itself. In other words, you get below that average and close a month, you'll actually be blowing a trend structure that you can plot on an oscillator. It's not just getting below an average, it's blowing a structure. If you saw the momentum chart, so if that were a price chart, you'd be getting short, okay? We're below there now. Well, 98.35 is the number. You close out this month below 98.35, and right now we're below 98. Quiet, no big deal, no headlines. You're going to accelerate the downside in the dollar where it's suddenly going to be a player. It hasn't been a dynamic force yet because it's been in such a narrow range. Suddenly, it will start to make waves, and such waves as, for example, we've got the largest amount of foreign investment in the U.S. stock market ever last few years. Well, you know, if you're a foreigner and you buy in the U.S. stock market, you know, you own it in dollars. Mm-hmm. Not only does the S&P movement or whatever stock you own matter, but also the underlying money unit. If it suddenly drops 10% and the market goes sideways, you just lost 10%.
Nope.
Okay. So that's going to upset some foreigners in the stock market, but also the U.S. government bond, which can't afford this continued process of abandonment of U.S. debt by foreign governments. And when you break that dollar more sharply, the pain for them gets even more if they're still hanging around in the bond market. Mm-hmm. So that could help accelerate that. But what's so interesting is that The bonds are just above a level that we think is precipitous collapse, 110 to be precise. It's been down under 111 recently. And the dollar index is trading below a number it can't close the month below. These two factors could suddenly get into gear in a more violent way and have wave effects that weren't the topic of discussion of the last few months, which is the tariff stuff. Suddenly, something else impacts you that you weren't looking at. That's the greatest ambush effect you can get in a market, is when you're ambushed not by what you're focused on, but on something else that's also significant. And it's so interesting that silver just crossed its line a week ago, simultaneous with these two other big key markets about to cross their lines. So I don't think it's coincidental.
Yeah, I don't think so either. It is really interesting. Real quick comment about this has implications for the yen carry trend, which seems like it's really drastically ending, which also would impact all. I don't know if that's the chicken or the egg, if you would.
They're in similar shape we are, in worse shape debt-wise. And the point is that now we, us and them, you know, it's suddenly not just some country over there. It's also, you know, Jamie Dimon has made the point over and over, you know. Not only is this, we're going into the recession, but that bond market is, we're at the point now where unreality of decades is suddenly going to pay its dues. You know, there's only a point at which you can keep faking reality, like stock market bubble high or whatever. You can only go so far in excess or inverted. That there's only so far downside you can go with miners versus gold. And reality takes over and says, hey, that was a mistake. And whoosh, upside. Or the case of the stock market and bonds and the dollar pushed to the downside. So, and when reality hits again, it's usually not the headline that everybody thinks is the headline. All of a sudden, that's out the side window. Oh my God, a major commercial real estate company just went under. Oh, it impacted this bank. You know, you get the point.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Michael, well said again to all of our viewers. I am a very happy client and a reader of Michael's work. Michael, give us your website. How do people get in touch with you and how do they buy your services?
Well, it's Oliver MSA from Momentum Structural Analysis. Take your time, tool around. We go in some depth on what is our unorthodox methodology and why did we do it? What's the justification for having a different sort of technical methodology? And we explain it there. A lot of archived reports. We cover all four major asset categories. We don't just look at the stock market or gold. You've got to look at everything. You know, the bond markets, foreign exchange, they integrate sometimes more so than others. I think we're there. I think we're at one of those points in history where never before has the wave effect of one upon the other been so great. Anyway, fun times.
Fun times.
Yeah.
Michael, you've always been incredibly gracious to me, and I want to thank you so much. I'll put all of the links to Michael Oliver Momentum Structure Analysis. I'll put that website in all of the show notes on both YouTube, Apple, and Spotify. Michael, it's always a pleasure. Again, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Andy.
Take care.